Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Communication, confrontation, dedication. Now is the time to speak your mind and express the nation. Talking metal, talking metal, talking metal. Talking metal, talking metal, talking metal.
Hey, this is Mark Striegel. We are hanging out here at Local. It's a bar located right by Madison Square Garden on 8th Avenue and 33rd Street. Actually, the entrance is on 33rd Street on the corner of 8th. We are totally psyched because Fuse has decided to re-air Talking Metal on Fuse on Thursday at 11 p.m. That's Thursday the 13th.
You know what? I didn't even know it was a Thursday. I thought it was a Wednesday, but you're probably right. It's a Thursday.
Yes, it is a Thursday, and I'll double check that right now. But I think you're going to be out in L.A. at that point, right?
Yeah, I'm actually going to be in Los Angeles on December 13th, and you're going to join me in Los Angeles on December 14th. And we have some amazing stuff coming up. We'll fill you in on all that later, but what we want to do today is something really, really special. Mark, why don't you tell them about it?
We had the honor of interviewing Nikki Sixx, which a lot of you guys know because you've already seen the Fuse show. And again, if you haven't seen the Fuse show, tune in to Fuse on December 13th, which is a Thursday at 11 p.m. But we had the honor of interviewing Nikki for the show. We picked him up at his hotel down in the Meatpacking District in New York City, and drove him up to his book signing in Times Square, where he did a book signing for the Heroin Diaries at the Virgin Megastore in Times Square. So it was a lot of fun, and with traffic, it took a good 30 minutes to get up there. And the whole length of the interview, you'll hear, starts with us getting in the car. Nikki hangs up the phone. He'd been talking to his son, and we start the interview, and it ends when we pull into the garage at the Virgin Megastore in Times Square, and I think about 27, 28 minutes it took to get up there.
Yeah, I had such a great time during that interview. It was such a honor to be hanging out with Nikki Sixx. I mean, in 1982, 83, you know, I was such a big, huge Motley Crue fan, and to be with a legend was amazing.
Absolutely. And, you know, the funny thing is we probably only went about 3 miles with him in the car, and that's how long it took. I was just reading in a book that has all these facts on New York City that the average speed of a car driving in New York City is 6 miles per hour.
You know what's so funny is that I actually took a cab from 75th Street today from a wine store where I left my glasses, unfortunately, to 32nd Street, and it cost me $17.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. This place is insane, but yet we love it. We love New York City, and we love L.A., and we are heading out there. Maybe, I don't know how much time we're going to have, but we're going to try to set up a place where we can go have some beers with the Talking Metal L.A. listeners. Originally, I wanted to do it in Santa Monica. Don't know if we'll be able to do it in Santa Monica. It might have to be in Hollywood. But we'll keep you guys posted to if and when that is happening. But without any further blabbering here, let's get into the interview with Mr. Six.
Absolutely. This is an interview that we did, as Mark said. This is the complete uncut interview. You guys have seen some amazing parts of the interview on the Talking Metal on Fuse show, which will once again be broadcast December 13th at 11 p.m., 8 p.m. Pacific time, correct?
No, 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
Yeah. No, so no. Yeah, 3 hour time difference.
Yeah, 8 to 11, right? 8 p.m.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right.
So 8 p.m. on the West Coast, 11 p.m. on the East Coast, and I'm not sure in the middle of the country what it's going to be.
Yeah, 3 hour time difference, not a 4 hour time difference. Okay. Yes, 8 p.m. in L.A. on December 13th and 11 p.m. here on the East Coast. All you people in between, just figure it out on your own.
Right, absolutely. And guess what? Just about anybody who has digital cable has got to have Fuse at this point because Comcast just picked it up in a bunch of places. We know Time Warner has it. Cablevision, of course, has it. And I'm sure that you guys have it. If you don't have it, go to your friend's house. If you don't have it, call up your cable company and demand to get Fuse, the coolest channel. As Nikki Six says in this interview, he quotes, Fuse is the coolest channel out there, coolest network out there, he says.
Check out myspace.com/FuseTalkingMetal. And here is Nikki Six.
Okay, killer, I'm dying to see you. All right. Okay, I love you. Bye. My son, he fucking rocks.
Amazing.
He's so cool. All right.
You guys all set?
Yeah, we're good.
Well, this is kind of, now I've never done this.
This is crazy. Right. An interview in a van going to your signing for the amazing book, The Heroin Diaries.
In New York City, my favorite city in the world.
Cool. And we're in the meatpacking district right now. We're going up to Times Square. But, Nikki, I got to tell you that I've been carrying this book with me for 7 days in a row.
Yeah.
Showing it to everybody. And when I finished, not the book, but just your last entry for your diary, I was crying at a bar in the Empire State Building.
Wow. Because see, it's touching people emotionally, which is, you know, moving me too.
Absolutely. This book had such an impact on me that it's helping me all over the place in not just what I do on a daily basis, but just I'm addicted to different things. And
We all are.
This thing is really making an impact on me.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, when I found the actual diaries, the reason that I wanted to publish them was because this was the reaction that I wanted. I really wanted that reaction from people, because inside, as you've experienced, is there's the quest for what's going on. You know, what happened? Why? How can I be on a jet selling out arenas, be on the cover of Rolling Stone, and something's not firing right? Something's misfiring in my stomach, and I don't know what it is. Not saying I didn't have fun. I won't apologize for the debauchery. It was a great time, and I still have a great time, but there was just something missing, and that's what I get out of the diaries more than the drug addiction, is the quest for what went wrong.
But what was wild is that the other guys in the band had their families and wives and whatever they had, but the thing that struck me is that you did the tours, and then you'd go back to your house in Van Nuys, and you were alone.
Yeah.
And partially, probably
self-imposed, you know, barricaded and isolated. It's. I guess I chose that because I didn't feel connected to anything else other than rock and roll. So when rock and roll wasn't happening, it was a bad thing.
See, I know that the book emphasizes a negative time, but I have to say, there was the guy that Ross Helfand brought out on tour.
Yeah, right.
Jason.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I wish that I could have been him hanging out with you guys.
Well, you know what? The book, what I get too, is a lot of people, they say they laugh out loud.
Right.
Have you seen the cartoon, that rabbit, Life in Hell? You guys ever seen
Possibly.
That?
Possibly.
I don't know if it's an East Coast thing. But
maybe it's a West Coast.
It's a West Coast thing. And there's this rabbit. And this rabbit, he's like this quirky-looking, demented rabbit, always gets himself in a mess. and it's his life is in hell because he never means to do it. So like the girl's panties, when the girl comes to the door and I give her panties back.
Oh yeah, that's insane. And she said, well, the panties are mine, but the shoes aren't mine? Or which one?
The panties aren't mine. That's like how it still is to a certain extent. If there's dog shit in the middle of the road, I will somehow be the guy who steps in it. And I actually really laugh at it because that's like kind of part of the Motley way as well, is that we actually always seem to do the wrong thing but yet somehow get out of it.
Right.
And it's just, I think that's kind of hopeful to everybody else on the planet.
Definitely. Now tell us about the CD, 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the soundtrack to the book.
Yes.
And it's John and I were talking earlier. It's almost like a concept record, but instead of like Quadrophenia, where it's fiction, this is the real deal,
right?
Are you guys going to be playing gigs?
You know, I tell you what. First, it was me and James Michael and BJ Ashba, my lead singer and guitar player. We had no intention of ever putting anything on it except for the Heroin Diaries soundtrack, just like any other soundtrack for a movie. It doesn't say by Danny Elfman. Well, maybe now it says by Danny Elfman, right, but usually it's just the soundtrack to whatever the movie is. And we saw a movie in our head from the book. And then radio started freaking out, and they wanted to play Life is Beautiful, and they said, what's the name of the band? I said, there's not a name of a band. We go, we want to play it, so you need a name of a band. So that's the worst. Trying to come up with a band name in 2007.
It's hard, right? Because every cool name has probably been
taken. It's taken.
Right?
So DJ, who's not a DJ, who's a guitar player.
DJ Ashba.
Ashba, right. Phenomenal guitar player, said 6 a.m. I said, wow, that's like the hour you're coming down. That's right. This is like a crazy.
Perfect for this book.
Yeah, and my last name, 6, Ashba and Michael. So,
A.M., right.
Yeah, and I said, great, number 6 a.m. He goes, no, S-I-X-X a.m. I go, there's no way we're going to have my name in the band name. And he said, yeah, we have to. So they fought with me about this until finally one of them said, you're trying to raise awareness. You're trying to raise money for a charity. Use your name, dude. You sold 45 million records. Use your name. So I was like, all right, okay. So now I'm okay with it now, but I really had a struggle. I'm such a being a band guy.
Right.
Yeah, but this is like a different thing because now you're telling these guys, no, I don't want my name in the band. I want it to be a full thing.
Yeah.
You guys.
But it's cool because, you know, I started writing a novel, and it's very dark and very telling of a lot of things that I can't tell you about, but people will go, oh, I know what that's about, or oh, I know what that part's about. It's one of those type of things where it's really going to be the truth, but in novel form, and we're going to score a soundtrack to it and do it again.
Cool. Awesome.
And so are we going to tour? We played one gig live, right. And it was such a rush to be on stage with a different band, with a different sound, with a different presentation, that you know, I've started going like, yeah, maybe we could do this, but we're going to wait and see what happens.
Did you know that DJ Ashba's first gig that he saw was you guys?
Yes.
Which is out of control that now he's in the band with
you
guys.
Yeah, he tripped, and we have a studio together, Funny Farm Studios. Wow. We were always writing. We just wrote with Drowning Pool for their new album.
I was going to ask you about that.
We spoke
with Stevie recently.
Yeah.
He was talking about the experience.
Yeah, it was a great experience. They're a great band, great guys. And it was cool because I sit down and talked with them, with DJ, and I said, you know, what do you guys want to do? And as an artist, I can say to another artist, you know that there's 50% of the planet that you're not selling records to. And they said, what do you mean? I said, I don't know a lot of chicks that are running around singing Let the Bodies Hit the Floor. I love the song, but you got to have a song the way Van Halen, when they were raw, or the way even Sabbath, when they were raw, reaches the chicks and the guys. And I go, if I can help you do that, I feel like I'm, you know, being of service for you guys. And because I go, you guys got the other side covered. And between them, their ideas, me and DJ's ideas, I think we wrote a song that is universal, and yet the Drowning Pool fans are going to embrace it. And you know, songwriting is a craft. It's not just like throwing mud against the wall. I mean, it's actually, it's a craft. You have to like really get it just right, and it's a struggle. And those guys are high class guys.
See, I wanted to talk about something in the book, and one of my favorite ever written rock songs in the world is Wild Side. And I was reading some of the entries when you were headed to the studio for rehearsals at Denny's, and maybe you might want to elaborate or not on that.
Yeah.
But the thing is that you were writing insane songs that, to me, back in the day, were my favorite. They're still my favorite. Mm-hmm. I just got the second version because I had the original record, but I got the remaster of Girls, Girls, Girls. Yeah. And I like the fact that there's the instrumental versions of this.
Isn't that interesting?
Stuff. It's really cool to hear it, like, not mastered.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, I felt as a fan that's cool.
You guys
cool.
added a lot of cool stuff on all the remastered
Which is so
stuff.
Cool that you guys bought your stuff back and put it out your way, the way you wanted to do it. And, you know, you said the same thing. How are these bands? You're the creators of the music. You do this. And then the labels...
own it.
Or the business people own it. How is that? You should own it. And
it's such an old school network idea. It just doesn't work. And the other thing is, I mean, you know, as a business, if you look at the percentage of album sales that are successful versus the amount of product that they put out there, if you went with that business model to any major Coca-Cola, anybody, and say, we got a plan. We're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars and only sell 5% of the product. We're only going to sell a little tiny bit because we're just going to throw it against the wall, and if it sticks,
if it
sticks.
If it goes, it's good. If
and
it doesn't,
if it
doesn't.
And if it doesn't, it doesn't.
They don't
care. Oh, and it's just ridiculous because I think, you know, album sales can go up because artists can connect to fans who is the consumer by cutting record companies out that do not do nothing more than bank and distribute. I think record companies are valuable distribution houses. Right, you know, we allow Universal Music to distribute our music.
Motley Records.
Yeah, Motley Records, and they distribute it, and we market it, and we give them the product, and we own the product. And if they do a bad job, we take it away from them, we go to somebody else that distributes it, and that keeps everybody a little bit on their toes, allows us to always do the right thing for the fan and not do the right thing for the record company. Who, you know, their job is, and for fans that don't know this, their job is to collect masters. They collect 500 bands, and when they have 500 bands with four records each, you know, they've got thousands of songs, you know, and thousands of albums. Then they take them and they go, let's go merge with Seagram's. Let's go merge with Starbucks. And they take your music,
the stuff that you did,
and they make money off of it after, even if they shelved you. So, you know,
they
still own it. So, you know, I always say to all my friends that are musicians, I go, make the record yourself, even if you have to go get a loan from a bank. Go make the record yourself. You can make the Heroin Diaries album is one of the best sounding records.
Yeah, yeah, no, it sounds insane. It
costs $50,000 to make.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I believe you. I just can't believe
$50,000.
I've heard the stories of albums costing so much money, and that is crazy.
I know. So you can do it, and then you own it, and then, you know, I think that that's the right thing to do for especially young metal bands and rock bands that don't necessarily fit into a niche that's accessible.
I was listening to Accidents Can Happen today, and that sounds like the biggest, you know, great ballad, like, of all the great albums that came out. And I can't believe that you guys made that album for that much money and still put out quality stuff like this. I mean, it's crazy. It's amazing. Well,
that song was
it's a great song.
It's one of those things that just came. We were saying, you know, we feel that we had a double album of music, but we were kind of defining it by subject matter and defining it by how the album flowed. And we felt like we wanted this one song that was just heart-wrenching, that related to the subject of relapse. And that song, we wrote it and recorded it and put it together in one afternoon. It was just one of those things. We were all driving home in our cars, and we were calling
listening to the demos.
Yeah, listening to it, calling each other on cell phone, going, I can't believe we wrote this happened. It's just one of those things.
I mean, the record to me feels like, if you listen to I read the book before I listen to the record,
which is unusual. Most people hear the record and then the book,
and it was wild for me because I really like listening to the record after reading the book. And I don't know if you prefer people listen to the record first and then read the book or not.
Well, I mean, we released the record first because we wanted people to get into the music, then get the book, and then go, wait a minute and go back and rediscover some things about the album. But it doesn't really matter. Whichever way that it works for people doesn't matter. I just like the idea that, you know, no one's ever done a soundtrack to a book before.
Right. It's insane. It's
fun.
I wanted to ask you about somebody who gets left out of a lot of the history of Ozzy Osbourne, mm-hmm. Motley Crue, Randy Castillo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite drummers. Yeah. Any memories you could share with us about going on the road with Randy and playing with him?
Randy had the same thing about him that I feel about Slash, which is salt of the earth. You're always comfortable around him. He was always chill, mellow. He could be walking down the street or walking on stage. He was the same guy. He loved music. He loved the history of music. He was very proud that he was from Albuquerque, and you know, not a lot of artists had come from Albuquerque.
Right.
And he had such a soul about him. It was amazing. And a talented drummer. Really,
I was
really
always
talented.
A fan of his drumming. And he got psyched when he got into Crue.
Sorry to cut you off.
No,
he got sick while you guys were recording or right after?
Right after we finished, yeah. It was sad. And then it went into remission. And it looked like he was going to be able to go back out on the road with us. And then it kicked back in again.
See, you guys wanted him to go out with you. But the thing is, you had to protect his health.
That was the hardest thing to do, is when he told me, he goes, come on, let me go. Right. And I said, Randy, I go, you know, we've talked to your doctors, and they just said it's not a wise thing. He goes, I need to tour. And I said, it could be a disaster for your health. So, you know, he stayed home, went through the chemotherapy, then it went into a remission, or it was controlled. And then we had the talks about actually coming back out on the road. I was excited because, you know, I just love his energy and his drumming, and then it kicked back in again. And so, you know, we all got to sort of, you know, look at each day we have and grab it, you know, by the throat and shake the hell out of it, because we don't really know what's going to happen.
You know, speaking of Randy, and you said Slash, you mentioned Slash too, you thought Slash was like the younger brother you never had, which is out of control. And I can't believe, being the metal fan that I am, did not know that you and Slash had this amazing relationship until I read this book.
Right.
And I saw Guns N' Roses in 1987 in a small club, probably right after they toured with you guys.
Okay. Didn't they, like, ask you for advice and stuff? You guys took them under your wing.
They were a young band, and they, you know, they had questions and stuff.
I think I saw them after they did the Girls, Girls, Girls stuff, and then went out on their own for a club tour. I saw them.
Did they do the Cult before us and then us, or did they do the Cult after us?
I think they did the Cult after you guys, but I'm not sure. But I saw them when they were headlining a club tour.
Yeah. I remember going into the Rainbow and seeing Axl, and Axl grabbing me by the coat and going, Nikki, our song got added to MTV or something like that. And yeah, it was obviously MTV. VH1 wasn't really doing
around at that point. It was around maybe, but not doing that kind of stuff.
And Fuse wasn't. So that was the big thing, if you could get on MTV, because they were playing videos, you know, and not reality shows. So I remember him telling me that, and then seeing it come on, and they'd made that video before they'd even toured with us.
Right.
I mean, that record was dead in the water.
Took a long time to
break.
Well,
that's what I read, that the label was ready to just, like, say, go make your second record. Mm-hmm, but then you guys took them out on tour, and then everything blew up for them.
Yeah, well, I mean, people saw them in a big arena, and they were a great band. You know, as a raw, just band, but they had great songs, and there was a chemistry. You know, it's very much like Motley. There's a chemistry. Nobody can really explain it. You can never explain why a band's successful. I mean, if you want to break down the Rolling Stones piece by piece, I can't imagine that if you really to analyze it, it sounds very like a recipe for success.
Right.
You know what I mean? You go, you think about it. You think about Motley Crue, and you go, that doesn't really work. You know, you got a drummer who overplays and he plays rhythmically. You got a bass player that comes from pop punk roots. You got a guitar player that only listens to the blues. You know, you got a singer with this weird voice. This is never going to happen, which we were told, but we didn't listen.
Glad you didn't listen.
But most bands that, you know, are somewhat unique, and in fact, the more unique, actually, the bigger. Look at U2.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when U2 first came out, I didn't get it. And then they've done some amazing work over the years.
Absolutely.
And Rock and roll is very strange, isn't it?
Yeah, promise not to laugh at this, but in... It should be 83, 84. I was in ninth grade, and we had these things called school dances.
Right.
And they weren't
the
put on.
Dance.
You remember the school dances?
Yeah.
They weren't actually put
to,
on by the school. Well, tell me about your
school. Well, no, we used to, like, you know, go for the girls, but.
Right. Well, see, we should have been going for the girls, but instead we were excited about the Shout at the Devil release, and we took a cassette.
Right.
We gave it to this DJ.
Right.
And we said, put it on, and then we had about 10 kids that were into Motley Crue.
Right.
And we did the, like, air guitar headbanging thing to Shout at the Devil.
That didn't get you any girls.
Yeah, no, no. Actually, none of us went home with any girls.
Yeah, they made them run the other direction.
We thought that that was going to get us the girls.
Right, right.
But unfortunately, it didn't.
It didn't.
Yeah.
Speaking of getting girls, I'm friends with a guy named Casey Chaos.
Yeah.
And he recently married Tori. I don't know if you remember this, but he said he was touring with Brides of Destruction.
Yeah.
And you... called this girl,
mm-hmm.
right.
And we're kind of put the strings in motion for their relationship. Do you remember any of that?
Oh, yeah. Those guys were cool.
Yeah.
And what's he doing now?
He is in Las Vegas. He's got a record recorded, and he's looking for somebody to release it. And it's kind of back to what you were saying. He's trying to maintain ownership of the
Yeah, good for him. Good for him.
And,
yeah, he has a lot of passion for music, and it's just a matter of finding people. There's great ways to distribute your music. I mean, let's use MySpace as an example.
Right.
I mean, MySpace is so powerful. If you have a relationship with MySpace and you can use that portal to get out to the community that you're looking for, you can turn a lot of people on to music that they actually want to listen to.
Yeah.
They want to listen to.
You guys have, the site is myspace.com/theheroindiaries, or just Heroin Diaries.
We got Heroin Diaries, and there's MySpace... /whatever, just Nikki Six.
Oh, cool.
And that's a good one. You go there and you can find James Michael and DJ Ashbin, learn about them, and the clothing line that I have, Royal Underground,
which is
doing really well. So there's all kinds of stuff. The charities there.
Yeah, the Running Wild in the Night.
Yeah.
Let's talk
tell
about
us about
that
a little bit, because that is something cool that you're giving back to people.
Yeah.
And people that run away. I mean, there's a lot of people in the world that I think could be helped by what you're doing, and... I just wish that they can all hear about this.
Yeah, well, Covenant House is right here in New York City, and they're all around the country, and I met them, and what they do is they go get kids off the street. The biggest reason for kids on the street is the foster care system. When they turn 18 years old, they are released, and if they don't have a family... Obviously, they wouldn't be fostered and fostered,
right, right.
You know, either homes or in the care system. So they have nowhere to go, and they end up in gangs and prostitution and drug dealers, and they sleep on the street, and they kind of all bond together, but dysfunctionally, and you see them, you know, squatting in abandoned buildings. And Covenant House goes and gets these kids. Not only do they give them a place to sleep and food, but they get them education. They get them health care, and they even teach them financial management, and they get them back into the system so that they can come out the other side and do something good with their lives and actually do something good for society. So one thing that, you know, part of my story was I ran away from home when I was very young, and I only had a tiny taste of what they have to deal with, but it was enough for me to, you know, this to resonate for me. And creating a music program, which is Running Wild in the Night, inside Covenant House, gives them just one more reason to stick. Because you know what? Life's supposed to be fun. So if these kids are in there and they're getting therapy and they're, you know, in treatment and they're getting education, that's good stuff, but it's not fun. You know,
but if they have a music program in there, it's cool.
Exactly.
Like, they got something in Covenant House to do that's fun.
Right.
And schools, half of the schools in the United States don't even have a music program.
It's
so
a real
the fact
issue.
That they can go to Covenant House and get a music program is
right.
killer. And I didn't even know that that's what Running Wild in the Night was.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm just donating proceeds from the book to Running Wild in the Night so that we have, you know, money to keep this thing running. And I was recently in Washington, D.C., and I spoke on Capitol Hill and for NADAC and for SAMHSA. And, you know, there's ways to try and get government funding for things like this. Bush just gave $99 million to NADAC for all kinds of different ways of dealing with addiction in America. And one of the one of the things that I really support is there's a thing called the Parity Bill. And the Parity Bill is going to, I hope, gets passed by Congress. It will be a federal law that will force insurance companies to have a rehabilitation implement into their policy, so that, well, here's a real easy way of explaining it. You're a guy who has a job. 70% of all people that have addictions have jobs. Okay? So they can't get rehab because their insurance company doesn't cover it. So they lose their job, they lose their house, they lose their car, they lose their family, and it economically affects our country. So by putting this thing in place and forcing insurance companies to give people an opportunity to get treatment actually helps our economy.
Yeah, it not only helps them, but it helps the entire economy of the United States.
Yeah, exactly.
And one of the things I wanted to mention is that even though everybody has addictions, I might have different addictions than you had, but reading your book helped me in whatever addictions that I have. Cool. And I think that's a cool thing because, I mean, it'll definitely, I think, help people with any kind of addictions. But for me, just, I rethink stuff now in the last 7 days that I would normally do because I read it out of your book.
That's great. And, that is so good. Thank you.
And I literally, Nikki, I feel like I've been with you for a year.
You're tired, aren't you?
No, I'm tired, but I love it. I mean, like I said, through the good and the bad, I wish I was right there with you. And,
nice.
And anybody who's reading this, you'll feel that way. Yeah. I mean, I didn't. Some people read stuff fast. I read every word as if you were talking it to me in that real time way.
Yeah.
Like, and to me, that's why I felt like I was with you every single day from Christmas 1986 to Christmas 1987.
It's interesting in how the record ties in with it. You can get the same feeling from the record, but it's like a little bit of a different angle. Like, as rock fans, we can listen to it as a rock album, or we can listen to it as a concept record, like you were saying, or we can listen to it as a personal journey. Or I've had so many people that could come up and show me Life is Beautiful tattooed on them.
Awesome. That's crazy. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I love it.
I mean, I understand, you know, getting a Motley Crue tattoo 25 years of doing it, but
Life is
a
beautiful.
Brand new band named 6AM, the song is connected with them so much.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful.
Totally out of control. Yeah. And this record is amazing. I mean, when I listen to the lyrics of Van Nuys and just think about the house, I mean, it has a huge impact on me. I mean, I would have. Have you ever been by the house?
I went by it recently.
Really?
I went by it recently, and I was with DJ. And we had to do something out that way, and I go, come here. Let me show you something. And I go, and there's a security thing. You have to push a code to open the gate, and it's bent.
And did you bend that?
No, Vanity did.
Oh, wow.
I go, it's still bent 20 years later.
Jeez.
It's just like it's bent. I'm thinking, why didn't they straighten that thing out? But she did it.
Control.
Well, Nikki, it's been great having you on the show.
Thank you.
And, I mean, first show I ever saw was Motley Crue at the Aragon Ballroom in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
With Saxon.
Yeah, with Saxon. Yeah. Awesome.
And read The Dirt, and I'm currently reading the new book.
Nice.
And, you know, we just feel like we've been hanging out with a friend.
Good.
And even though you don't know us at all.
Yeah, but you know what I do know? I know that you guys started doing something really cool with this show.
Thanks, man.
And Fuse is doing it, and I think it's the coolest fucking thing. I think Fuse is the coolest network out there, and I think this is just a really important part of it.
Well, thanks. Nikki, thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
All right. Take care.
All right. Let's go rock it.
Thank you.
No worries,
yeah,
man.
Really
no worries, man. You guys gonna hang out a little bit?
Yeah, we'd love to get
a picture.